This is Mary Ingleby interviewing Michael Cook on the 14th of May 2013 at his home in Whitstable. So, Michael, perhaps we could just begin by you introducing yourself to the tape.
Yes.
To me.
Right, I'm Michael Cook. I was served in Gibraltar from September 1959 to July 1961 with the Royal Air Force. And was one of the other things, I was organist of Wesley House Methodist Church at the time.
Lovely, thank you. So let's just go back to the beginning now and talk about, this was your national service.
National service, yes.
So tell me about how, what happened when you were called up for national service. Were you here in, is this your home?
No, I was in Beckenham, our old house at the Beckenham-Sydenham border. And I had to go down to Beckenham to register. This was in 1955, but I was granted deferment because I was at the Guildhall School of Music and then got into the Royal College of Music. I was advised to do the first year of the course at the college and then go and do national service and then to go back to the college to complete the course, the three-year course.
So how old were you, Michael, at this point?
I was 18 and I actually joined the Royal Air Force at 21 and came out at 24, went back to the Royal College of Music. I was advised to, by the RAF themselves, not to do national service as such, but to sign on and do a regular engagement, the minimum of 3 years. I would get much more in the way of cash, pay, and I would be able, more important, I'd be able to choose my own job. So I chose to go into, to be a teleprinter operator because I was already playing an organ and I didn't want to spoil my touch for piano, hitting a typewriter, which in those days would have been a manual one. And it stood me in good stead and I still do it on a computer keyboard. Touch typing, which is very useful.
So was there any particularly, were you given a choice of which service to go into?
Yes.
And why the RAF?
Because my father was in it originally.
And how did it come about that you were going to either be in communications? Was that allocated or?
No, I was given a list of jobs. And one of them was teleprinter operator. Well, I knew that a teleprinter was a keyboard, and I thought that would be the ideal thing for me, and I think it was divine inspiration, because under the circumstances I would have been a bit at sixes and sevens to know what to do, but I chose the teleprinter, and of course it enabled me to touch type, which I still do today.
So you went and enlisted. And you were all called up. And then were you, where was your training?
Oh, my training was at one of the, it started at one of the recruit training camps, both of which have gone now, so it's irrelevant. And I did my trade training at another, a trade training camp. That has also gone.
And these were in the UK?
These were in the UK. I was then appointed to a UK post, not far from my home, and then I was summoned to the office one day to say that I would be going called up to go overseas, and I was given a form. I went home and showed it to my father, and he said, well, I would suggest Germany, Gibraltar or Australia. So I put those down and I got Gibraltar.
And just going back to your training for a minute, what did your training entail?
Just work how to work the keyboard and learn to type.
Didn't you have to do sort of square bashing and that sort of thing?
Oh yes, we did parades and things like that, but that was at the training camp. But I didn't do parades in Gibraltar because I was a shift worker and worked all night, and, every fourth night.
So your training in the UK was actually, as you say, touch typing, learning how to operate.
Yes, we had a cover over the keyboard and you just had to stop, and we did it to music. at first, and then we gradually got faster and faster, and it was a three-row keyboard in those days, and it was a 12-week course. Well, of course, we had PE and Padre's Hour and things like that, and but I quite enjoyed it and got to know people.
So what were your feelings when you heard that you were going to Gibraltar?
Well, I wondered what it would be like. I considered Gibraltar as a large chunk of rock with the iron staircases here and there and some buildings on it. And I thought, this isn't going to be very much, but at least I'm going, and we'll just have to put up with it. It'll be for 2 years.
Did you have any knowledge about Gibraltar?
None at all. Went?
And what about your father? Did he know about it?
He didn't know anything about it either. But we knew roughly where it was.
I mean, one of the things that I think is extraordinary about Gibraltar is it's all about, I think we said this on the phone, all about geography. Yeah. And actually the size, it's such a small place, isn't it?
Yes. Well, it's, I think it's 6 kilometres long and about 2.5 wide. So
tell me, by this time, presumably, had you got colleagues and friends who were also going with you?
No, we just left those at my last station before I went out, and you just made your friends as you went along. The first thing to do is get to know your padre. And of course, the first thing I did when I got there was to walk down Main Street and find the Baptist church, but there wasn't one, I felt, but there was a Methodist church, Wesley House. And I just walked in, and I was there for the rest of the time that I was in Gibraltar. Eventually, I found myself playing the organ for them. You know.
So what about the journey? What was your journey? How did you get there from the UK?
Oh, we got there by air, from an RAF station here to North Front Airport.
And is it not in the same place as the airport, current airport is now?
Oh, yes, Gibraltar.
So oh, yes, what was it like flying in? Because I've heard it's quite scary.
I didn't really take much notice of it, really. You have to bank rather sharply when you're over Spain. Mind you, there was the time when you were not allowed to overfly Spanish airspace. That was after I'd left and the border was closed. And the aircraft had to bank very sharply. Indeed, and it's of course landing on a wing and a prayer because the airstrip isn't all that long. But that didn't concern me because I'd left Gibraltar before the border was closed, and I went back from a holiday in 1995, long after it had opened completely. So of course we were able to overfly Spain with no problems, as you still can today. But we arrived in one piece. And
what were your, I mean, what happened when you arrived? Were you met in sort of army trucks and things?
Oh, a bus. A Royal Air Force bus that I would have taken us to. Mind you, a lot of this I've forgotten about, but it would have been, you would have been met in a vehicle because not knowing the place, and you would have been driven to the place where you were. Had to go and sign on to what they call the strength. And we just went to various sections. I don't know what they were now. So.
Where were you sent then?
Well, I was sent to where we all went to New Camp for the first night, and then we went up to North Front. But I was actually my actual place of work, which is now a block of flats, was in the old air headquarters. Building which has also been demolished, and so there's really nothing there at all now that I was concerned with.
Can you remember what your sort of first impressions were really of the place?
I was surprised actually. Greenery, lots of it, and the town, and it's just like I suppose going to somewhere in Wales, because the town goes up the hill, and you go up from, if you go east of Main Street, you start going up and up and up, until you get right to the top of the rock and get a beautiful view of the Bay of Algeciras on one side and the Mediterranean on the other. But fortunately, I was on this continuous watch, they called it, meaning the office never closed. And of course, we did shift work, and we were able to have the. It was a 4-day shift pattern, and you slept off night duty on the third morning. You had the third and the fourth day off, and then you came round back to the first day, and were on the game for the next pattern.
So, where, let's talk about first about your. Where you were billeted, what that was like?
Well, after having huts for 24 people, we were in rooms for four. And we had an electric fire in front of the window and a ceiling fan, which was very useful when it came to cleaning the floor, because you mopped it with a sponge, a mop, and then you just turned on the fan and went away and left it, came back about a quarter of an hour later and it was dry. So... we had bed headlights as well, and a centre light, and radio distribution. And we had a...
What do you mean by radio distribution?
It was a broadcasting station on the site, and the RAF broadcast its own programmes. You know, and I was interviewed once on it for Desert Island Discs. And... one or two people complained because my choice of music and theirs were as different as chalk from cheese. I was choosing carols by King's College Cambridge Choir and orchestral music and so on, and they all wanted the latest pop songs. Anyway, one of them apparently went over to the RAF Centre and complained, and he was virtually put in his place by the person there who said, you choose what you wish and not what other people wanted. But,
and what about the people who were your roommates? I mean, did they become good friends?
Oh, yes, I got on very well with them. Tony Norton died a few years ago. I lost contact with Norman. Apparently, he was in Bristol somewhere on one of the radio stations, well, you'd know more about that than I do.
The local BBC, maybe? What was his second name?
Bilton.
Doesn't ring a bell.
No.
There was a Norman at Radio Bristol, I remember.
Yes. Who else did we have? I can't think of the other man's name. There were just the four of us. And we had to move into a room nearby. That's when our part of the building was being redecorated. And I liked room 59, and we got a good view of the airport. But we went into 61, which sounds nearby, but it wasn't. You only went up to 60, and then there was the toilet block. Then you go up a staircase into the front of the building, and the room at the end was number 61. So it wasn't actually next door, only in number.
And where was it? I mean, it's not there anymore, obviously, but whereabouts was it in Gibraltar, this camp?
It was North Front. This is the big where the airstrip is, isn't it? The army have got it now, and it's going to be a hospital. In fact, I saw a picture in a book that I read a few weeks ago. They are actually building the hospital on what was the sports field. It will be the main forces hospital, which will replace the old one, which was somewhere south of the town.
And what about, did you have all your meals and everything there?
Oh, yes. Yes, all in the mess downstairs.
And what sort of food did you have? Was it all right?
Yeah, it was very good. I don't know what sort of things. I always remember we did have orange lemonade, which was made from lemonade powder. There was something in it that cools you down on a hot day, which is why we had it. And tables for four, and at the other end, behind a trellis, was the corporal's section. The sergeants, of course, were in their own mess on an, in another building, which I never went into.
And were your companions, were they also teleprinters, or were they doing all sorts of things?
They were in more or less the same thing, I mean, different shifts. So
you were doing the same sort of work?
I was doing the same sort of work, yes.
So you had your life there at the camp, and then you went off to your work, which was, how far away was that?
Oh, the first, it was round the corner in New Camp, because I actually worked, and the bus took us round and brought us back.
And what was it like then? Describe what the workplace was like for me.
Well, very square, just painted walls and stone floor. It served. I didn't really worry what the wallpaper looked like. I just did the job and went back to RAF and North Front. Had a meal, then went out for the afternoon somewhere.
And what about the teleprinters? How many were there, roughly?
Oh, I don't know. It was a long time ago now.
But I mean, 50, 100?
Oh, no, not as many as that. A couple, I think. I don't know.
Oh, really? Is that all?
It's very, very, it's a very small place, yes.
And were you, I mean, I presume that you can't talk very much about the actual work itself.
Well, I haven't talked about it, and I'm not going to, so...
Right, fine, that's fine.
Official Secrets Act.
Yeah, no, I understand that. Yeah. I don't understand that. But perhaps you could just tell me a little bit about what you were told about the sort of work you were going to do, and were you aware of what sort of work it was and how you felt about it, all that sort of thing would be quite interesting.
Well, yes, it was just, we weren't really told anything very much. You were given a piece of paper with some writing on it and said, you type that out. And, you know, it was, as you know, a telex, it's a machine at the other end. And when I came back, I did temporary work as a telex operator. Exactly the same thing.
A useful skill. And you had the little ticker tape that went in when you received it,
oh, yes.
Did you? Yes.
Yeah, yes, we were taught to read that. Because, you see, there were occasions when there wasn't actually any... you could have gone to a place... In fact, I worked with one, the AA, and the tape came out of the machine and you had to send it to somewhere and you had to read the tape to know where to send it.
Gosh, so you could actually read the dots?
Read the dots. Mm. Yeah, so just, it's... they don't have it now. But it was five holes, and you could get combination, using the different combinations, you could get 31 different combinations out of the five. And also a 32nd, which was a blank with no holes at all. The little hole in the middle was just for the sprocket wheel to pull the tape through.
So these 31 combinations...
All the letters of the alphabet, and a few punctuation marks. So
you could. So, do you think you could read it now?
I doubt it.
Did you have to work quite fast? Did you have to be quite efficient?
Well, they didn't allow for mistakes, of course, but then who does? So.
Well, quite difficult when you were new on the job, I would have thought.
Well, but I think our trade training helped us around that, because we were taught to operate the keyboard and... You know, and what the tape was and so on. And there was a really old thing called, well, one day I remember we were on the switchboard. This was at the training centre. But of course, you see, when I'd left the training camp, went to my first posting, you dialed the number. See, because the technology had moved forward. I learnt the switchboard, but I never operated one. Except when I got to the BBC, because I was there for 2 years, and the switchboard was in the teleprinter room in Broadcasting House, and we used to sort of send a message, and then we pressed the button on the machine, and the operator answered, and you asked for the station, and they put you through, and then you sent the message, and then you told the operator you'd finished, and they pulled the plug out, and then you typed another message, and so on. And,
No, this is really interesting, Michael. I'm just thinking about what you, I'm just trying to imagine you as this 18-year-old musician, new recruit, having to do your national service. I mean, were you aware when you signed up to do your teleprinting that it would be, you would have to sign the Official Secrets Act?
Oh, yes. Yes, lots of it. Well, of course, I signed it. I said, well, yes, we don't want anybody knowing what's going on. And of course, it's when you sign it for life.
Absolutely, yes. But I mean, you were still very young when the war was happening in the UK.
Oh, I was only a baby then. And we just went, we were evacuated to Oxford. I had an aunt and uncle there, and we went and lived with them for a year, and went back to our old house, and apparently I was told that a large lump of clay had come through the roof. It had been thrown up from Cater Road about a kilometre away, and it landed on our staircase, and the piano went through the floor.
Oh.
But we rescued it because it's behind you now.
That's it?
Yeah.
Right.
Anyway.
And did your, what was your father's work in the, during the war?
Oh, rigging and airframes. And he went to Egypt or somewhere. I don't know where he went, but he had a book on it, which all got lost years ago. So.
But what I suppose what I'm trying to get at is that, you know, the war was you know, nearly 15 years over. So were you, how political were you, if you like? How much did you know about politics and what was happening and you know, I'm not rephrasing this very well, but the sort of work that you might have to do in Gibraltar is what I'm saying, really.
I didn't even give it a thought. You see, the war had finished 15 years ago and I wasn't even thinking about it. I said, well, I had to do national service and so I got to go and do something, and I decided I'd do teleprinting, and that was it. But I just didn't connect it with anything like that.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because you wonder if people today, with all this social media and everything else, you know, texting and tweeting and online, would
I'm not into any of that, except online. Tweet I will not do, neither will I do Facebook. All I want to know is, how do you get out of it when you get into it? Rather like the car, how do you stop it before I start driving it?
Yeah, no, I understand. I understand. Yeah. And you talked earlier about, you know, you obviously were efficient at your job, you worked fast, you worked well. But what happened if you did make a mistake?
You just corrected it.
What does that mean, sorry?
Well, put it right.
Oh, corrected it. Sorry, corrected, I thought you said collecting it.
No, corrected it.
Corrected it,
yeah.
Yes.
So it's your responsibility, and if you go wrong, type a wrong letter, you just do the correcting procedure. And I think it's a string of E's or something, error, 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 and then to type the last correct word again.
And did you have people coming around sort of inspecting what you were doing? Or sort of, did you have, what would I suppose now be called a line manager or something ridiculous like that?
Well, we had a supervisor, but came around, probably looked at you and how steady you were getting on, and that was all.
So just describe to me, if you will, you were told to send a particular message.
Mm-hmm.
So did you have a whole pile of these, or did you have people keep just, did you work continuously? Just tell me how it went.
Well, you just type one, and then you type the next, and then you type the next, and so on.
Were they all given, were there a sort of pile waiting for you when you went in?
It was continuous, you see, because I relieved the person on my duty, and then somebody relieved me. And but the job was just there, and I just carried on. Well, look, that's got he said, well, that one's a bit difficult, you'll find that one easy. And the bus is going, goodbye. And that was it. So I just carried on. Then somebody came, looked at me, and said, right, how are you getting on? I've got to take over.
So it's like a sort of in tray of work to do, yeah, if you were a typist or whatever.
Mm. That's right. And then if it ran out, waited till somebody gave you something and typed that.
And how long were the shifts?
About 4 hours.
Oh, not too bad.
Not too
then.
Bad, no. Morning, perhaps morning and breakfast till lunchtime, afternoon, lunchtime till tea time, and evening, tea time till about late evening, and then the night duty was on until breakfast time.
And how many shifts were it a day? Sorry, if you've told me this, but I can't remember.
How many shifts? Or
how many shifts would you have to do a day?
Oh, two or one or something like that. Two, I think. I'm not sure. So.
Did you have a sort of typical day then? Were all days pretty similar?
Yes. You just went on, did the job, and went off, and then you went out. I had more variety outside the RAF, really, walking around the rock, old buses and things like that.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that in a minute. I'm looking forward to that bit. I just want to sort of nail this little bit down first. We'll just talk a little bit more about the work. So I'm just imagining you now. So you've got your train, and you're doing all your work. And is that all you did? I mean, not all you did. I didn't mean to belittle it at all. But, I mean, so that was your work always at the teleprinter. It didn't vary.
Didn't vary, no. And we didn't do any parades because it was just lucky, actually, because it was all on the day after night duty and we were excused. So my life in the RAF was to go into the teleprinter shift and then go back, have a meal and go out. And same thing again. So much more variety was outside.